First day, we are doing a revelation show. Each one of us, each one of the major cast members, has agreed to reveal something about themselves that we've never revealed on the air, and that has to meet a certain standard.
Which is,
we put a guy in charge. We each had to go into a confessional booth and confess our sin or secret or something that humiliated us or embarrassed us. And if it didn't measure up, we had to go back and come up with something else.
Had to be humiliating.
No, doesn't have to be humiliating. Might be something that we didn't want to share. Could be a secret.
Might have a disease.
Could be a disease. Could be that dreaded disease that you have. I might get it too. You know, you don't know. But Larry, so this is dangerous radio for me. This is a high wire. Because I went into the confessional, I admitted what it is, and the guy said, whoa. And that whoa, it was what I'm looking for. So we've got some good stuff. I do have to address whether or not Beth and I got married. You know, there's plenty on the table. We just left this huge radio experience, probably the most successful radio show in the history of radio. And walking away from that, I have to tell you that I had no emotional experience about it until the day after when I woke up. I woke up and I realized I'll never hit that button again and have that kind of access. Millions and millions and millions of fans.
Now, this is your first public appearance since then, leaving.
Right.
And you go on the new one Monday.
Right.
Are you scared?
Well, I don't feel scared. Maybe a little bit, because I don't want to disappoint people. And I have to tell you, we've done two run-throughs this week. And this is the great thing about having your own channel. All of a sudden, I said, when we're doing the run-through, just pop on the run-through. So, in essence, we've been on twice already. And whoever was driving in the car, all of a sudden, we just popped on the radio. And that's fun. And the run-through was liberating. I had the most amazing radio experience New Year's Eve. And I'll tell you why satellite's great and why every broadcaster should be involved in this. New Year's Eve, they said, it's the first time your voice can be heard on your own channel. I was out of my contract with Viacom. Would you call in? And I said, I don't know if I'm up. Went out, had a bunch of drinks, fell asleep. But at midnight, I heard fireworks coming out of the park. And it woke me up. And I said, oh, what the hell? I'll just call in. I started talking stream of consciousness into this telephone receiver, kind of drunk, you know, a little bit hungover. And I've never had that kind of freedom before. I didn't use any foul language. It wasn't about that. I didn't have to worry about the constraints, what topics I could talk about. I didn't worry about, average quarter hour maintenance, crossing the quarter hour, how many listeners I had. Whoever was there, it was fine with me. And it was the most intimate radio I've ever done, just talking into that receiver.
How did you become Howard Sterners? How did you develop this persona?
Well, you know, I've made no secret of the fact that I've always wanted to be on radio. I can remember being 5 years old. And, you know, it goes back. My father was a recording engineer. I've told you this before. And my father used to look at Don Adams and Larry Storch and some of the great voice guys doing cartoons and commercials. And I would go down to my father's studio. Once in a while, he'd bring me. And I'd watch his eyes, and he would stare at these guys, and he would have such reverence for the greats. You know, these guys were great. And I would watch these guys working, and I said, oh, my God, you know, if my father looked at me like that, he'd be so proud of me. And I think early on when I saw that microphone, and I remember to this day, I was a kid, and Don Adams was recording Tennessee Tuxedo, a cartoon. And he's standing there in a blazer and a turtleneck, and he looks so damn suave to me. You know, this is before Maxwell Smart. And I saw my father looking at him, and I went, wow, you know, I want to do something like this. And I didn't listen to a lot of radio growing up. I can only remember one guy, Brad Crandall, I used to listen to at night.
Great voice.
Yeah, it was this guy.
But how did you carry it on to become what you become, to take it to the fullest extent? No, you didn't draw any middle ground.
Well, there was a process. I mean, when I was in college radio, I did a show called the King Schmaltz Bagel Hour. It was me and three guys, and it was very irreverent. And it had always been my fantasy to go on radio and not do a straight broadcast, but to bring the audience into sort of my thought process. I remember listening to the radio, and you'd hear a guy close a door in the background on a news station, or you'd hear a cart or something drop on the floor, And you'd go, what the hell is that? And they wouldn't tell you. They'd act like it wasn't going on. And I kind of had this fantasy that I'd create a radio show where I'd tell you everything. Everything about me, everything about it. Whoever walked in, complete honesty. We strip away all barriers. And this was my thing. And I went in college radio, and I started this. And I got fired after the third show. We did a bit called Godzilla Goes to Harlem. And you know, no one ever heard anything like this. And it was a college radio station, Carrier Current. And we did this thing, and I got fired right on the air. And that was sort of an omen of what was to come. And my father wrote me a letter, and he said to me, you know, it's great that you're on the air and all of that, but I listened to the tape, and you go, every minute, and you fumfer on the air, and you don't sound professional, and you're not enunciating. And he said, even a clown probably was a trained ballet dancer or something, and you need to go out and do a straight radio show. And in my opinion, learn how to, you know, do radio.
That's good advice.
It was really good advice. And I went, and I did a straight show for 2 years, and I was awful. It was chronicled in my movie. And I said, you know what, though? It was the best 2 years of my life. I had to do everything at that station. And I kept dreaming in my head of breaking sort of all the walls down, all those straight walls down. Someone asked me the other day, gee, did you ever think about doing like a Larry King show? They said, you're a very good interviewer. Interviewing is a strength of yours. And I said, that's a career that wasn't for me. I wanted to expose myself. And expose every... So I didn't want to have any secrets from the audience.
I like the guest. You like you. Well, you want the show to be into you.
No, that's not it. That's not what I'm saying. The guy who replaced me in New York, David Lee Roth, I listened to his first show. And he said, hey, man, this ain't heavy lifting. This radio stuff is easy. And I was thinking about that. And I thought, no, radio isn't easy. It's easy. Sure, anyone can go on the air and talk. But to open yourself up and actually break down all the walls and think about all of your insecurities and put those on the air, I think it isn't easy lifting. There's a lot of emotional lifting you have to do. But having said that, when a guest comes in, I think the reason people might think I'm a good interviewer is that I'm genuinely curious about a person. I don't make judgments. If somebody's a stripper, that's great. If someone's a prostitute, Robin, who works with me, she decided to work with me. She heard a tape of me in Detroit. I was interviewing a prostitute. And she said to me, when I heard you do it, you asked her everything, what she ate for breakfast, why she went to the store, you know, who were her parents, how did she get into this sort of miserable life? And you didn't make judgments. And that's what the show's always been about. I myself don't really have outrageous behavior, I don't think. But I'm a voyeur. I like to watch outrageous behavior, and I like to learn about outrageous behavior.